Hey, everyone. Brett here. We got Camila over here, too.
Hi.
Welcome back to the pod. So we just want to get like right into it up top. We're going to talk about some of the Taylor stuff.
Yeah, I know listeners know that I'm not super in tune to what happens outside of the literal TV screen. I have seen some of these tweets. They're horrendous, to say the least. But Brett, I know you're friends with Taylor, and I know that you are really, really more in like the thick of it and of what's going on. And so I would, you know, really want to hear from you, like exactly what's going on. Like, yeah, can you talk us through the situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to talk through the whole scope of the situation, right, just because there's so much, but I'll try to, you know, condense it. And
of course,
you know, listener, just I'm gonna try to kind of speak you know, from the heart here, kind of like as much as possible. So for, you know, people who might be aware, and I do want to like get into a lot of intense stuff here. So I do want a trigger warning up top of this conversation, a trigger warning, honestly, to a lot of different communities. So just be mindful that this is going to cover a lot of tweets that were incredibly harmful to the Asian community. There was a lot of fat phobic things. There were anti-trans, anti-gay, ableist. I mean, there's a lot of
anti-Semitic, anti-Indian.
Right. Yeah, right. There's and far more communities that we've even listed there. So I just wanted to list that, you know, mention that up top. But there were some old tweets from, you know, 2011 through 2014. Again, at the time of this recording, you know, what makes it difficult too is that it just feels like there just keeps being more, right? You know, and it's really painful to see. And it's really vile. It's honest. It's fucking vicious. And it's so upsetting and painful and sad. And it's shocking. It's like, I was so speechless, which I'm probably going to be on the borderline of being speechless, even because it doesn't even feel real, but it is. And if you're looking to familiarize yourself with the situation, it's hard to find like in a spot where there's everything, but I would just encourage you to, you know, go check out Reddit. There's a few different threads that sort of capture as much as can be captured, but it's a lot. So just be mindful. Yeah, so I mean, I would consider myself some version of friends with Taylor, just like a lot of other, you know, commentators, other, you know, people who have pushed for diversity and inclusion and a lot of these different things in the franchise. So we were all incredibly shocked, yeah, disappointed in everything. But it is important, as you know, I've said some of these things on Twitter, Instagram, what have you. But it's important to have that same, you know, even if it's your friend, even if it's someone who you trusted, or, you know, even if that sense of trust is very much in question, like I'm right there along with a lot of people who are listening, who looked up to Taylor, and trusted her. And now that's kind of up in the air, right? And, you know, I'm definitely someone who thinks that people can make mistakes, but, you know, and at the same time, it's incredibly important to acknowledge the harm also. And it's incredibly important to prioritize the harm, right?
Right.
Because there were just so many communities that trusted Taylor. And this one, I think, stings more because it's not only just reading these just, yeah, like inexcusable, you know, I can't say enough like how fucking disgusting these things are, you know, and this commentary was, you know, and yeah, it's inexcusable. And as much as I don't recognize, you know, the Taylor that I've gotten to know, like in this stuff, it's her. It's her from, you know, a few years back, and obviously people can grow, and she has, you know, pushed for, you know, change. But at the same time, I recognize that that's kind of all up in the air at the moment. And it's incredibly valid to not have that same sense of trust. Not only were the tweets disappointing, but, you know, just like we've been talking about with Chris Harrison, just as we've been talking about with Rachel Gercano, like, we need to push for accountability and owning these things. And there needs to be, you know, steps forward to maybe not even rectify, but first acknowledge solely and without qualifiers the extent of the harm on these different communities. And, you know, I'd apply that to Chris Harrison, I'd apply that to Rachel, and I apply it to Taylor. And it's more painful to apply it to Taylor, but, you know, I very much need to. And I was all the more disappointed by her initial round of apologies, you know, and I know that she's since put out a few different statements, but the initial response was rooted in defensiveness, and that was just not the move. And it's really disappointing to see someone who, you know, again, like, if that was a different person and she was responding to them, I don't think that, you know, she would call out her own behavior. You know, she would, yeah. She would call out like how bullshit her response was. And
what were, so I saw something of a response. I don't know if it was the first or the second or, yeah. You know, what were some of like the things that she said that you're like, oh, she would definitely call this out if it was someone else apologizing this way?
Well, at first, and I think this is where it gets into, and I'm actually going to go into this a little bit more in a second, but okay. I think with when she initially responded, one, it kind of sounded like a little bit of like this, sorry, you were offended type of language, which like just the phrasing of it wasn't really taking full ownership. Mm-hmm. And there was this defensiveness to it. She also didn't include all of the communities that she harmed in her first statement. It was very directed solely at BIPOC, but in reality, you know, there was anti-Semitic, there was ableist, there was fatphobic tweets, like, and, you know, it's important to directly acknowledge the communities that were harmed. And I don't know if that was just like literally a rush to a statement because she didn't even see all of her own tweets yet. The way she went about it was, you know, incredibly disappointing. And listen, I'd say this to her as a friend, you know, and I'd say this directly to her, that I was shocked at how disappointed I was. And I'm honestly like, you know, just like I think a lot of either, you know, followers of hers or, you know, people who've looked up to her or friends or commentators, what have you, I think we're all just in this sense of like stunned processing state. And it's all the more difficult to have a proper, you know, and ready, especially immediate take on everything just because it is so jarring and it's so upsetting. And it's also incredibly harmful to so many different communities. And that actually is one thing that I wanted to get into a little bit is, again, like, I can't say enough like how disappointed and disgusted and all of those types of words that I was at seeing those tweets. What I think is worth calling out is also just like this idea of you know, people demanding kind of like this immediate response from you know, people who have spoken out about these types of things in the past, whether it's, you know, contestants or commentators or friends of Taylor's, what have you. And I was a bit upset to see, like, for example, like someone DMing my Jewish friend, DMing like some anti-Semitic tweet to her directly that a friend of that person wrote, and just expecting this immediate response to a tweet that directly harmed her and her community. And it goes beyond that. It goes to people sending multiple friends of mine who are sexual assault survivors, sending them rape-related tweets just with no hesitation and demanding a response where it's like, what do you have to say about this? Where's your statement about this? And again, like, I'm mindful of not wanting to center myself in this, but where I was really upset is like people literally a day after I post about having a fucking eating disorder or struggling with disordered eating, people are sending me fat phobic tweets and demanding a response and saying all these people are bad people, like myself included, for not responding right away, even though I responded very quickly, I think. But like it's there's a degree of it that feels incredibly inhumane. And yeah. These are like some of these people I think are, you know, like Chris Harrison, Rachel Kirkconnell defenders who are just kind of like finding some sense of joy, you know, in this. But then I do think there's other people who I usually agree with where, you know, they are very mindful of trigger warnings. They're very mindful of, you know, sensitivity in discussing these things. But when it comes to bringing it to the attention of people they want to hear from, they don't show that same sense of care. You know, like they'll just directly send a harmful tweet to the harmed community and with just no hesitation. And I think that's incredibly unfair and inhumane. And I think that is another conversation, but it's of course relevant here. And you know, I mean, the fact that Mike Johnson's DMs were getting, you know, flooded to the point that he had to, you know, say something, and he clearly was really saddened and affected by the situation. The fact that the Black Chillerettes, like that podcast, they were getting flooded with people demanding an immediate response, people saying that their work was immediately invalid because they had recently partnered with Taylor on something. Just there's something that's not okay about that. And there's obviously, you know, obviously accountability for Taylor needs to be done here. I think there does need to be this time to process for a lot of different people, especially if you saw yourself in any of those tweets. I mean, I think about the fat phobic tweets that she sent out, a lot of them were from 2012. That's the year I started starving myself, you know? So like that shit hits close to home. So like, honestly, forgive me if I need a second to like take the hit and be able to process it and verbalize it. Cause it's a lot. It's a lot. And I know a lot of people were really struggling with all of this. It's just a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's something you said to me. I mean, obviously we talk about some of these things before we start recording. And something that, Brett, you said to me, I mean, you were speaking to this, but just to add these specific words to what you just shared, you said something like, people are all for trigger warnings until they want an immediate comment. And then they just throw that out the window and shove these insensitive, horrible things right in your face, like to the people who are most affected by them, because they expect them to be the ones who comment first.
Yeah, no, exactly. So I think that's just, you know, something that I think a lot of people just need to take a breath here, because it's this has really, really been a lot. And again, this is completely separated from the accountability that, you know, Taylor really needs to figure out. And I do actually want to call out both some comments that Chris Randone made, and then kind of weaving that in with the podcast Two Black Girls, One Rose, just talking about, you know, what accountability for Taylor looks like, because it also is fair to say that accountability is just going to look different. Mm-hmm. And the steps forward are going to look different. So look at Chris Harrison, his, you know, journey of accountability, if you will, is going to look a lot different than Rachel Kirkconnell's. Rachel Kirkconnell's is going to look a lot different than Taylor's. And the comment with Two Black Girls, One Rose, what they said is that we're used to seeing this in reverse, right? We're used to seeing something bad from a little while ago. Maybe it's 2018, maybe it's whatever. And then it's brought to light, And then that's when we see
like an ignorant racism or like a casual, casually racist picture or party or whatever, if we want to use Rachel Carcanal as an example.
Right. Yeah. And we're used to seeing that arc, right?
Right. And they open their eyes to the racism, or they open their eyes to their own ignorance. And then that's where the journey begins.
Yeah. And then the journey, and then the journey begins to, you know, hold themselves accountable, to be actionable, to apply the lessons that they learn, et cetera. You know, with Taylor, you know, she has been an advocate for the communities that she has now brought harm to. And, you know, that's been something over the past couple of years that she's been an advocate for. So now we know her for that, and now we have to backpedal and do this other sense of accountability. And I think this accountability looks a little different, and this is where it kind of ties in with some commentary that Chris Randone had, where, you know, her accountability might be like, okay, so you say that you've taken steps, or you've clearly done the learning, right? You've clearly done the work. You know, there's this assumption, and that's actually going back to the apology. It was very, you know, self-centering, and it was very, at times just dismissive and condescending, and like, oh, I've done the learning. Like, that's not me. Like, it's like kind of the same lines in a way, where it's like, sure, okay, maybe it is true that you have done the work, but now we need to see it in a different way. And a point that Chris brought up is like, you clearly did have a lot of racist views. You had a lot of anti-Semitic views. You had fat phobia ingrained within your psyche. And also something that we didn't even mention, there was some really egregious shit about clients that she had. And that was honestly some of the most upsetting things to see, because, you know, it's important to remember that she is a mental health professional, right? Which is why a lot of this is all the more disturbing. I mean, she had a tweet that jokingly recommended suicide as a treatment. And that's like disgusting to see. There's something clearly
that's fucked up. Not
right. Especially for someone who's in training to become a mental health professional. I think about even when, you know, because in that year, in 2013, I was applying to internships. I was very well aware of what I was putting on social media, right?
Yeah.
And that's just
that's wild.
Not something you do. It's just not something you do. So, you know, saying all this, like what Chris was saying is like, you clearly had some incredibly harmful ideologies in 2012, 2011, 2013, whatever year you want to look at. And, you know, you say that you've now corrected all that, you are no longer that person, and that very well might be true. How did you get there, right? What were those steps? Because maybe that's the value in this accountability, is that you can now, through this experience, reflect and figure out exactly how you did unpack your fat phobia, your racism to so many different groups. How exactly did you unpack this, if you truly did, you know? And that's maybe something that Taylor's really going to reflect on, if she actually did fully separate from these ideologies, or whether they're still there in some capacity or
down,
not.
Yeah.
And she's the only one who can answer that. Maybe she won't be able to fully answer that. So this all to say, this is just all really fucking sad, hard, disappointing, painful. It feels like a sense of betrayal, and that's pretty much what there is to it, I guess.
Yeah. It's been a long season. It's been a long season for us Bachelor lovers. It's been a long season for, you know, the POC women and Matt, who have been really put through the ringer and like truly harmed by the ineptitudes of this season. And it's been a long, hard season for you, Brett, who, you know, you're way more of a public figure in this world than I am. And I have the luxury, at least now, still to be able to close my computer and turn off Twitter and not have a million texts or emails or DMs or whatever about all these things that are happening. And so It's been a long season, and I'm, you know, I want to say, like, I'm, you know, we're here for you as well, Brett. And you, the way you just said that was so eloquent and beautiful and so clear and concise. And I really feel grateful that you have been putting in a lot of work emotionally, mentally, not only into this podcast, but into this franchise, which I know you said a few episodes back when we were joking about how, you know, rough the season was, about how if you love something, you know, like, you want it to be better. And you have truly exemplified that. So I want to say thank you to you.
And I suppose to close on that, because it kind of reminds me of it, is like, I think why all of this, I mean, there's plenty of reasons why all of this was so devastating and painful and betraying, all of those feelings. I think one of the viscerally most like sad parts of this is this kind of feels like it's muddied the message. You know, it's muddied the message that not only, you know, Taylor was pushing for, but like a lot of us, right? And I'm really nervous that it muddies that. And you know, perhaps I'm naive in thinking that I want to say momentum. It's again naive to and cautiously optimistic that I think we are a little bit on the precipice of change. I'm hoping for this franchise. And I do really worry that this stops it in its tracks a little bit, and it might let the wind out of the sails of people who were really fighting for this stuff. And I do really want those people to know that I'm still here with them. I'm going to have a lot of reflecting to do when it comes to my friendship with Taylor. I don't know where I'm at with it yet, if I'm being fully frank, and it's fucking painful to say that, but it's true. But just know that those people who are fighting, I'm still going to fight with you. I'm still going to amplify your message. And even if it's harder to do so, even if it's incredibly painful and exhausting and tiring and sad, it's important. And, you know, we'll get through this week.
Yeah. To your point earlier about there are people who are, you know, Rachel Kirkconnell fans and Chris Harrison fans, fans/ apologists, I guess, who, you know, are taking glee in this, or they're using this, like, this is a horrible thing that we have learned, you know, like, not to excuse it, but there are people who are taking this like as a way to vindicate, you know, the Chris Harrisons and the Rachel Kirkconnells and the, you know, racists and the racist apologists.
A way to weaponize it, right?
Yes, thank you. Those are the words. It's a way to weaponize it. And I feel like that's something that we've seen time and time again in history and civil rights and every, you know, sort of social justice movement ever. You know, that's why Black Lives Matter doesn't have like a centralized leadership, because they don't want any person to be attached to this thing so that there can't be like any invalidation or takedown that, that happens.
Right.
I think that's why things like the Women's March, the original Women's March, had certain backlash, and these sorts of takedowns and these sorts of weaponization of these things is common. With any social movement that means like meaningful change and means like really having to reflect on, you know, people's own inner biases. And so I, as horrible as it is that this happened, you know, I think it was going to happen eventually. And I want you to know, Brett, and I want everyone to know, to your point about you're still going to be fighting, I'm going to be fighting as well. Where the people who care, we're going to be here fighting. And like, this is something that happens time and time again with every sort of social justice movement. You know, when there's any one figurehead or leader, people always attack that person to try to invalidate them, to try to discredit them, to try to take away from the movement and the progress and the change that they are helping to contribute to society and to their greater cause. And so while this is absolutely horrible and I agree with everything you're saying and she needs to face her own reckoning, That doesn't take away from, you know, the Bachelor Diversity Initiative that, Brett, you're a part of. That doesn't take away from Rachel Lindsay's work. That doesn't take away from this podcast and our message. This doesn't take away from the Black Trillerettes, you know, and everyone else who views this franchise with love, but also a critical eye to its problematic things. So, yeah, I just wanted to say that we're still here and we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, not going anywhere. We're still going to keep this up. And, you know, so this episode, we will get into the tell-all. Obviously, we needed to take the proper time, you know, to fully explore all of the nuanced feelings around all of this, because it's not something that can easily be, you know, pocket ready for Instagram. You know, it really needs a lot of reflection and nuanced conversation. But yeah, so we wanted to dedicate a lot of this episode to, you know, everything with Taylor this weekend. But we'll do a bit of a quick recap of the tell-all. And
yeah,
you, listener, you know that I don't love the tell-all. So yeah, you know, yeah, all the more reason.
Well, Brett, do you want to remind the listener why you don't like the tell-all?
So I don't love the tell-alls. This is the tell-alls in general, but specifically the women tell-all, because I think they've definitely had a tendency to pit women against each other. Yep. And I think it happens even more with the women tell-all than the men tell-all. There's this framing and positioning of the women to just like, oh, be catty as possible. This is your audition for Bachelor in Paradise. Just like talk over each other. And then Chris does his ladies, please. Like, you know, this big, strong man has to make sure he calms all these just out of control women down, right? It's framed like that every single year. And I'm always dreading it. And I was dreading it times a thousand this week, but we do want to cover it really quickly.
Yeah. Can I just say that I think they know they fucked up with all of the Victoria/in general Mean Girl drama content this season, because I truly felt like this women tell all, and maybe it was just the way it was edited, but again, editing is still a choice, that it wasn't very catty at all. It seemed very a lot of apologies being accepted, no real like talking over or back talking. You know, I truly felt like it was a very neutral toned, and like it didn't really escalate to like a cat fight anywhere.
Yeah.
And I was super thinking of you when when all of this was happening, because I know that you feel that way and I also feel that way.
Yeah. All right. So, well, shall we get into it?
Sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. So we start off this Women Tell All with a notice right up top saying that this was pre-recorded on February 4th, 2021. And we all know why we saw that statement, because Chris Harrison was right behind that statement. And I also wanted to, in that same lens, if you will, call out that ABC actually did a social media statement from the executive producers about a half an hour before the show aired on Monday. And it was essentially, saying that harassment of Rachel Lindsay was unacceptable. They stand with Rachel, et cetera. And I was glad to see it. There's two things. One, I wish it was sooner. I mean, she's been getting harassed for a very long time. And, you know, obviously it forced her to deactivate her account this past weekend. So I wish this had happened that day. You know, talk about the journey to accountability. Would have been great to see that from Chris Harrison himself. If he wants to start his journey, his anti-racist journey, you know, that's a good way to start. And then the other thing, again, I think about is like, sure, it's good to see that blasted on Twitter and Instagram, what have you, but the mainstream audience is not seeing that. And that was actually reminded to me this past week, because I was talking to someone at work and Bachelor came up. We're going over contestants we like. And she's like, oh, I really like that Rachel Criconnell person. And I'm like, do you know stuff that's
anything?
Happening? And,
do you know anything like, that's happening right now?
What do you mean? Listener, when I tell you I had to go do a whole monologue explaining everything, she had no idea. This person had no idea of any of this. And that is baffling to me. And all the more reason why, you know, again, if they have the technology to put a pre-recorded on February 4th, 2021, they have the technology to put their statement from the executive producers right before the airing of the tell-all. It's the same thing.
Yeah. I totally see how it's crazy to you, but for me, it's almost like, yeah, I get it, because that was me. Not super recently, because, you know, we've been friends and I get a lot of insight from you. But 2018, I didn't know anything about anything beyond what was on my TV every Monday night.
Yeah.
Literally zilch.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's like why this stuff is, you know, problematic and hard, because it's like, these statements are being made to the social media, you know, the unreasonable people on social media, right? We need to be calmed. But for the mainstream audience, it's business as usual. And, you know, it is worth calling out that, you know, and this was announced publicly, so it's not really a spoiler, but maybe potential spoiler for After the Final Rose. Emmanuel Acho was announced that he was going to be taking it over for Chris Harrison, which is a good step. And it's actually worth noting that I know a lot of people wanted Rachel Lindsay to take that on, but he was actually her choice to do it. So I think that that's going to be interesting.
Well, also to note, they asked her and she declined. Fairly right, exactly. So.
Yeah, because she's already done plenty of an emotional labor for all of this.
Did they reiterate it during the Women Tell All? Like, was that part of any sort of promo?
I don't think so.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think so either. Damn.
Yeah. So that's concerning, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I wonder if that mainstream audience that we're talking about even knows that Chris isn't going to be hosting.
I don't think so. I mean, because I, you know, it's making the rounds on like CNN and all these other articles, but people are pretty good at not looking at the news also.
True. Very true. So the first bit of drama that we get into is the MJ Yesenia feud 2-on-1.
Yeah, recapping that whole thing. Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, I was expecting for this conflict to be like a catfight moment.
Yeah.
Not that I was looking forward to it. I just, that is like the fodder for that in a tell-all that we've just grown accustomed to. And it was weirdly very, it felt almost accusatory at Yesenia. Like almost like she had overreacted or something, or spoken out of turn or something.
Yeah.
MJ, I felt, got like a nice redemption arc or whatever. And Yesenia was also like, she didn't back down from her actions, or she didn't apologize for her actions or take them back. But it just, it did feel like it was very,
it's like they tried to, well, it's like there was almost this like poking holes in the story where it's like, we thought it went down one way, but then this mysterious tell-all comes by and tries to conspiracy theory and mess up like kind of like what we thought we saw. And it just it kind of pokes holes in it. I mean, I don't actually think that, but that's what they were trying
to do. I definitely don't think that, but I think also we see that in a lot of other parts later in the tell-all. So MJ's kind of getting like a redemption arc. You know, do I think she is irredeemable? No, I think very few people in this world are irredeemable. For me, I didn't feel like she super owned what happened. You know, Yesenia brought up, you didn't own it with Matt. And then MJ was like, actually, I did. And then that was the end of it. Like, there was no like, wait, but did you? Because you said, you know, there was like, I was just confused. Obviously, it's edited to be concise and whatever. And I do think, and I'm going to repeat this throughout the podcast episode, I do think a lot of our quote-unquote villains got redemption arcs on this tell-all. Probably a course correction from, like, the Olivia Creedy stuff.
Yeah.
So there was that. I will say, Mari jumped in one of many times to defend MJ. And I don't know. It just felt like, was anyone there to defend Yesenia? Yeah, like, it just felt unbalanced. And then also, it felt like, what do you call it? Like the
audition for Paradise?
Yeah, that. It just kind of felt like that. Anyway, after that, we kind of were still in the bullying vein and we kind of transitioned to Ryan and talking about how, you know, like being a dancer isn't being a hoe. And then there starts to be this like back and forth between her and Victoria. And then Victoria is, you know, if I thought MJ didn't really own her shit, like Victoria like
compounded
makes MJ
that.
Look.
Yeah, exactly.
No, and Victoria makes MJ look like a saint that's doing her repentance for 20 years. Like, so Victoria just says the most ridiculous thing.
Do you think you're a super sensitive person though? Because I've been getting, I mean, death threats is a whole nother thing, but the memes about my eye that was swollen, the memes about my bra straps, and like I'll wear something with my bra showing, like I'll laugh it off. And I feel like the extent of your upsetness at it is like, are you just an emotional person?
Super gaslighty, I think. In my humble opinion, you know, she's saying she's been called far worse things on the internet, that she became a meme, this and that. And it's like, you're literally denying someone's experience. Victoria's basically accusing her of like holding on to it or like not getting over it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I love how cool and collected Ryan was. She says like, we're literally here to talk about this.
Yeah.
They literally are. It's the women tell all, literally, Victoria.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm glad that the women had her back. That's fair.
Yeah,
she was
it's like her feelings are valid.
Her.
Right.
Her feelings are valid. Just like it's valid that these people who are harassing you, if that doesn't affect you, okay, that's great for you. But not everyone is the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And then, you know, Victoria just kind of like doubles down on the fact that she's being harassed.
I was called a bully on TV. Okay, but maybe you were.
I was a
girl,
bully.
You were a bully. You were. Anyway.
That shoe fit. Also, you know what the wild thing was? I mean, with Victoria, come to expect it. But, you know, with these tell-alls, you have so much time to think about what you're going to say. And to choose to, like, double down in nonsense is a move, is a choice, to say the least.
Yeah. TLDR, Victoria has learned nothing.
Nothing.
Literally nothing. So then Chris asks Katie about her and Victoria's kind of altercations. Katie says it sucks to watch someone call her disgusting over and over again. And I agree. And then Victoria says maybe the only thing that was sort of pre-prepared and that sort of could give her some sort of a redemption arc.
Yeah.
You know, the name calling is completely unacceptable, but we're all getting backlash for however we handled anything. And I think it's important to remember we all did the best we can do. Life is a learning experience, as is this journey. And we're just getting to watch it back. So again, I'm just so sorry.
And Katie, of course, accepts the apology. But then she, and I'm giving her so much grace by saying this, but misspeaks, I hope, and says kind of a dumb thing.
Yeah.
We all went through something really hard, and I know some of you guys are experiencing backlash right now, and that's your own karma. So I really just want to move on, and I hope the best for everybody.
Big oof to this one. That's like more what I was going to say is like when I saw this, I'm like, oh, Katie, what are you doing? Like that is not. And another, you know, and again, like who knows, you know, if this was said exactly there or what have you, but it was not a good look, especially because they were talking about, you know, not only just like harassment but social media stuff, and it's one thing for, you know, there's a way to say like, you know, none of us
actions have consequences.
Actions like, have consequences. Everyone said the things they said, you know, like that happened, so you do have to kind of own what you've said and done. But there's a way to say that.
And she kind of did say that later, right? I feel like she backtracked. Right. She was like, death threats are never okay, you know, all these things. And I feel like she said what you just said, but like after. And I feel like you could tell that she kind of felt like she had stepped in it as well. Like, I think she was kind of like a little shaky. And it blows. We both agree that we did not love that comment. And I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt because of all the things she's shown us. Like, she has, you know, walk the walk and talk the talk, but you also have to own, just like she, I hope she meant that, you know, you have to own your shit publicly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope she's also owning the fact that that was like,
not a good rude, line at all.
A rude kind of and condescending, dismissive. Not yeah. a good look comment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then what ensued was a strange pile on, which like, I didn't realize Chelsea had so much contempt for Katie, but it seems extremely clear that she does.
Yeah.
I know I really like Chelsea through a lot of this season, but that didn't stop me from still picking up and, you know, mentioning on this podcast, like the different times when she said things that I viewed as maybe a little mean girly or maybe a little problematic or maybe like a little dismissive of other people's feelings in the house. I mean, she reiterated a lot of the main things right there on the tell-all.
Right.
The house was not toxic until you made it toxic by bringing the situation up to Matt and then causing the domino effect that led to every single drama in the house that you weren't involved in.
I could understand how in the moment she was like, oh, the house isn't toxic. We didn't like that comment from her in the moment, but we kind of gave it the benefit of the doubt. How can you not watch back and still say that? Like, this goes also to the whole redemption arc that MJ got and that Victoria is clearly getting as well. And it's like, how is everyone forgetting the very first regular day that they were there? And Victoria just picked a fight with everyone.
Yeah.
And how she literally went out of her way to make Marilyn look bad.
Right.
Like truly, truly made up things about Marilyn's character to Matt so that he would send her home just because she didn't like that Marilyn politely challenged her.
Yeah.
So it was kind of wild for me to see Chelsea react that way to Katie. There's definitely some sort of like bone to pick there, which I was surprised by.
Yeah. I mean, I've never understood the narrative that Chelsea said there, and I think some other people have as well, of that like the house wasn't toxic until you went to Matt, like that whole thing in regards to Katie. And it just doesn't make sense to me. It just feels like when you start trying to unpack that, then the whole case kind of falls apart. I do think there's something to be said about like, because it does seem like there's this sense of contempt that, you know, not only Chelsea has, but a few of the women have against Katie. And I think, at least for me on the outside, and I know, you know, neither of us were on the show, we don't know of so many things probably that were left out. And, it, you know, again, it probably maybe wasn't even just Katie who went to Matt about these things, right? So there's all these things.
I mean, you said you went to Matt about these some things, right? Right. You know, there were.
So I do understand the frustration. That's for me, it just, this stuff feels misdirected, right? It's like the frustration with production to elevate Katie doing that move instead of the people that we saw, but like there's probably plenty of other people who had moments like that we just didn't see. So I do understand that frustration, but it does feel misdirected in this sense. And again, like both you and I, we both like Chelsea and we both like Katie. So this kind of feels like this like, why can't we all just kind of like get along type of energy? I'm like, no, my friends can't fight. Like, no, I don't like this at all. Something else I wanted to bring up. So I know that we did mention that Katie sort of stepped in it by saying the karma line. Another line I actually didn't love from Katie was when she said she was like, or she was making a point about Chelsea, which I think was valid in that, like, I think Chelsea might be friends with Victoria or at least was on the show. And that's going to make it so she naturally doesn't.
Has like rose colored glasses.
Yeah, she has like rose colored glasses. You know, Katie said she was blind to it. And I think I've been a lot more cognizant about like ableist language. So whether it's blind or, you know, tone deaf or what have you. And listen, we all have done it. We've all like very much said that. So, you know, I'm not going to be like, how could Katie do, you know, I think we all sort of say that, but it's just something I'm mindful of, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's important to point out things so that we can be more mindful of them in our day to day.
Right. Right.
It doesn't mean it's nefarious. It doesn't mean it's like has a hidden meaning.
Sure.
It just means that these are things that accidentally harm other people that maybe we should think about and just point out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We're constantly learning.
Yeah, constantly learning, right?
Constantly exactly. learning and growing. To that point, a perfect segue to like another part of the pylon when Mari again is like calling Katie out for being like super harsh on Sarah, and then the next day like changing her mind. And Katie, this she said really well, which is crazy because she kind of said it more under duress and in some other parts of this pylon. Like, she said two things that I really liked. One was that it was kind of like a shock to her system, and she kind of realized that she had to get herself in check with how she was reacting to things, which I think is in line with the way that we saw her react to things, like, for the rest of her time on the show. So I think that checks out.
You came at Sarah harder than almost anybody.
And I said that to Sarah, and I said that to Matt.
You flipped the switch. Excuse me, I'm still speaking. Okay, you flipped the switch the next day, and you were like, oh, because now I know her story, we should all be nice to her.
Absolutely. It was a reality check for me.
But that's and fake as hell.
It's not. It's called learning. It's called growing.
And that's, I feel like, oh, that's like literally in like a, like everything that we stand for. It's like, you can change your mind. Like, you're allowed to change your opinion because you have grown and learned that you were wrong.
Yeah.
Like, right. I think it's so, and this is so prevalent in politics and stuff. And I think it's crazy that people are like, you didn't vote in the 2016 election and you're sorry about that. Like, fuck you. It's like, I mean, yeah, that sucked. But if this person is telling me that they're sorry and they went from being apathetic to caring and becoming politically engaged, yeah, like, okay, that sucks that you did that, but I'm not going to say, fuck you, like, you're irredeemable forever. So, like, yeah, it was just crazy. Like, that's fake as fuck. No, it's not. It's literally learning and owning your shit and going forward. Yeah, so back to the pylon, you know, women are, like, basically, like, accusing her of, like, using this to, like, get closer to Matt. I think later when we see their relationship unfold via clips, we see that they did have one. Yeah, I think, you know, America didn't see most of those clips. So I don't agree with the women at all. And I think it's a dumb argument, but I guess I can see where the genesis of it comes from.
Yeah.
And Katie says something about, you know, like wanting the house to not be toxic. Like that's like in her character. And that's why she went to Matt. And then Kayla says something that I found really interesting.
Like, I'm not going to shout like, oh my God, this is bullying toxic. If it doesn't affect me, I'm going to take, you know, the cues from the women that it actually affects. Yes, you can make space for people, but you have to uplift their voices first. We owed it like a dialogue before saying, oh, it's toxic, instead of like opening up the floor like Chelsea did in that episode, which said, is that bullying? Is that toxic?
Thank you.
And like people were able to like hash it out.
And to me, this was like, yes, of course, elevate the voices of the affected and the disenfranchised and the most marginalized. Of course. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like Katie did do that because Katie didn't throw anyone under the bus. Katie didn't say, you have to talk to these people. Katie alerted Matt to the fact that there were some women being harmed in the house, and he opened the floor for that to be a safe space for those women to come to him. So I feel like she did do that. And for me, I couldn't get it out of my head when Kayla was speaking and all the women were agreeing with her. I couldn't get the idea of the bystander effect out of my mind. Like, it was basically like, oh, let those women figure it out. Oh, let the victims figure it out.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
follow the victim's lead. It's like,
I think it's a delicate balance, like, trying to determine, like, okay, should the person who is at the focus of all of this, you know, take the helm? Or, and honestly, it's probably a little bit of a game of chicken, especially in such a high pressure situation like this, where, you know, we've said the word time every single week, where it's just, there's not a lot of time to work with. So there probably, I would gather, you know, be plenty of instances where, you know, whether it was Katie, whether it was Brittany, whoever was kind of at the forefront of the drama that week, was looking at the situation, being like, all right, should I say something yet? Like, what should I do? And then as the time builds, as the pressure builds, just it's about who cracks first in a way.
Right. And but that's why, I agree. And I think that's why I think Katie did handle it well, because I feel like she made it so that Matt could open the floor for women to feel safe to come to him.
Yeah.
And I think it's just so wild to be like, oh, you saw people hurting. Well, just take their lead. It's like, yeah, if you're talking about someone who has been sexually assaulted opens up to you, you shouldn't like turn around and force them to report it to the police, you know? Right. Like,
Yeah. Well, and also too, you know what else I think about too is like, and again, it's a very nuanced thing, and it's hard to say like exactly what's right. But you know what I also think about is like we have a tendency to be more of advocates for our friends than ourselves at times. Yeah. I can at least personally say that. You know, for example, like if someone like on social media is talking shit about me, I'm just like, whatever, man. I don't know. It's been a week. I'm just going to do something else. But if I see someone coming after Camila, then like, fuck you. Like, I'm going to be mad. I'm going to like, and maybe I'll get ahead of myself. And, you know, maybe in hindsight, it's like, oh shit. Like, I don't want to like, you know, respond on behalf of Camila, that whole thing, but I might not be able to help myself too. So it very well could also be that.
Yeah. I just think it would have been different if she like literally spoke for specific women. And I think that we have to be very mindful that not everyone is the same. Like, I know for myself, I'm very quick to speak for myself and advocate for myself and make sure that no one puts me in a bad situation. I feel like Katie is very similar. Who's to say that every woman is like that? That clearly wasn't the case with a lot of these women. I'm thinking like Ryan specifically also. Like, she was clearly very shaken by the whole ordeal. So I think it's also very presumptuous to be like, well, they would have taken care of it on their own. Like, this is a very low stakes type of victim situation. And I don't even want to call it that because it's still bullying, and bullying is so harmful. But like, if you were to replace like victim of bullying from this instance and put it in any sort of different type of victimhood, whether it's that a sexual assault or a robbery or I don't know, a hit and run, like you would never phrase it in the same way of like, well, you should have waited to take, you know, their lead in terms of alerting, I don't know, the paramedics. For sure, if someone doesn't want to report their crime, okay, that's fair. But if someone is bleeding on the sidewalk in front of you and you're just like waiting for them to give you approval of whether or not you should drive them to the hospital, even as they're bleeding out, like I don't know. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. No, that all makes sense. I very much am with you on that.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. But at least someone defended Katie, and that was Jesenia. So thank you, Jesenia. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we get to, oh man, this is like what I think a lot of us were like, all right, the Anna and Brittany saga. We get a little bit of a recap of it, just like we do with all of these, you know, sort of hot seat situations. One thing I need to call out is that Anna called Chicago a small town. It is the third biggest city in the country. What small town nonsense is this? What are you doing? There are millions of people in that place. You cannot small town that. I don't know if they're talking about a specific neighborhood. I don't know what the small town thing is. It's not a town. You're in the city.
I think it's definitely like, I'm going to, I hate the phrase devil's advocate, but I am going to in this case, in this low stakes situation, because I don't know. It just reminds me of when I think about Miami and growing up here, and like, it's a big city. It's one of the biggest cities in the country, not a top three, but it's up there. And it's like a freaking small world. Like, everyone, especially in certain like age groups, you know, everyone knows everyone from every high school. There's like a million high schools. It's hard to explain, but like, so in that sense, I related to it.
No, but, I get it.
But I would, but I think it is funny to picture it as like a small town. Yeah.
I'm just looking to be annoying. That's more what I'm trying
and
to do.
And I'm looking to be annoying right back at you, Brett.
There you go. Look at us go. Look at us go. No, but like, so I did kind of like want kind of like how you think this all went. So like to very express recap it, you know, Anna, you know, she does start off saying like, you know, nothing I can say can take back what I did to Brittany. And she essentially says that she feels like 100 times worse watching an air than she did even in the moment. And it seems like it was starting off strong. Then Brittany does, you know, call out that, you know, this happened weeks ago and she theoretically could have reached out to Brittany at any point to just check in, and she didn't, which like obviously doesn't look great. So I think that's complicated because like, I don't know, contract stuff and I don't know, like it's tough. Yeah. But the thing that I did think this happened a little bit later on is I think when you're apologizing to someone, and we've had our fair share of apologies lately, is people got to be really fucking careful when they're apologizing that they don't start qualifying it, right? You know, like Anna on just started saying like, you know, but I did like talk to, you know, I had some friends who like talked to your ex-boyfriends and that whole thing.
I see where you're coming from, Brett. But I remember, like, I remember when she said that it was in response to someone asking her where the rumor came from, not like her defending herself. Like, oh, but I thought it was good information, you know? Like, so.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I guess I just have a general mistrust of, or I'm really examining, the genuineness of all this. Like, even like I was when it initially aired, because I do kind of remember. She was sort of like flip-flopping back and forth for a little bit. And then when it did, like when push came to shove, I think she was a little bit more genuine. So I still think I was teetering even and watching this during the tell-all of like, okay, I'm trying to land on if this is genuine or not, but that's a fair point.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. In my perspective, I thought she was genuine. Just all the extremes that she was saying, right? Like, nothing I can say can make it okay. There is no excuse. Like, someone at some point asked her, right? Like, what was going through your head to like make you do this? And she was literally like, there's no excuse. Like, there's no excuse. Right. Like, I don't know. Like, that sounds horrible. And I think to your point, like in my mind, I was like, that actually is the best thing you could have said, because there is no excuse.
Yeah.
And there's no, doesn't matter how angry you were or whatever. Like, that can provide context, but it doesn't excuse anything. And I thought that she was really owning it. I feel like the way that I wanted MJ to own her shit, that, you know, I knew Victoria wouldn't own her shit, like the way that I wanted the other, like more like C-string villains to own things that just were never even, we weren't even like brought to their attention at all. Like, I felt like she was the only person who actually owned things. And I also loved Brittany's response. Like, I think it was great that she held her accountable to the fact that she didn't reach out. I think that is tricky because, you know, like you mentioned, contracts, but also you don't know someone's like limits.
Yeah. You don't know if that person wants to hear from you.
You don't know if that person wants to hear from you. You don't know if that person is going to say like, fuck off. And someone could argue to that, well, then let them say fuck off. And I would, you know, agree. Yeah. But I think there's some people who would be like, I want you to never speak to me again. It's so hard to say. Yeah. And time usually can help. And like, you know, when it aired, there'd been some time. You just don't know if someone wants to hear from you. And I don't think that's an excuse for not reaching out ever. But I think that is the beginning of a conversation. Well, what does the next part of an apology look like? Especially one that's not necessarily to a whole community, like we were talking about Taylor or Chris Harrison. But when it's to one person specifically, like what does an apology and holding yourself accountable to that one person look like? I think this is just the beginning of that conversation. Like, is it, you know, laying boundaries out up front? Is it waiting a time that you feel is better safe than sorry to follow up or check in, even if the other person thinks you waited too long? Like, is it asking the person right after your apology, you know, would you be comfortable with me like checking in on you? Or I mean, but even that sounds weird. So it's like, this is the beginning of that conversation, I think.
So Brittany does, you know, end up saying that she doesn't want this to ruin Anna's life either, and does ultimately, you know, accept her, you know, apology, even if it's you know, maybe they might not be the best of friends after this, but I suppose that's a start to making an amends.
I loved that Brittany said that. I thought it was really mature and awesome, and probably humbling for her, for sure. A few episodes ago when she mentioned that she had never been bullied, you know, we didn't say this on the podcast, but in the back of my mind, I was like, were you maybe a bully?
Yeah, it's like it's like one of those situations where it's like
if you don't know who that friend is in the friend group, then you're probably that friend. Yeah.
Right, right, exactly. That whole thing.
She admitted to, like, you know, saying things in the past that hurt people and like not wanting that to be who she is anymore. So like a well-rounded, self-reflecting woman. But what I loved even more was her, you know, her shout out to the sex industry and to women who are actually escorts and, you know, saying very loud, very clear on national television.
And then I also want to address, you know, people that are in the sex working industry. It's just like, don't let somebody tear you down for that. I believe that everyone deserves love and nobody's life is worth more or means less based on occupation.
And thank God. I'm just like, I love Britney all the more now. And because, you know, we spoke about how this also could be harmful for those communities, right? Like, that's such a huge insult, a life-ending insult, that it literally is, but it shouldn't be.
Yeah. So I think she navigated that balance really well of like so respecting the community and the work while also making sure it was known that she wasn't that herself and doing that in a really good way.
Yeah.
So definitely big fan of how Britney handled it.
Yeah. And next we get a lot of cutting room floor stuff. We see a lot of this those missing group dates.
This is where I'm getting so mad. I'm getting so mad because the missing group dates, like, it feels like, they were fun and cute. Yeah. You know, like when you were watching like SpongeBob and shit, and then like every once in a while they'd be like, this is like the lost episode. I'm like, why was this the lost episode? Why are we just getting this now? Like, you had this the entire time and you didn't just give us another episode of SpongeBob. Why were you sitting on this episode of SpongeBob? This is what it felt like.
So I can't relate because I'm not a SpongeBob fan. It gives me anxiety. Oh, it gave me anxiety as a child. One episode.
I need a separate podcast episode unpacking your SpongeBob drama.
I saw one episode. I mean, I saw several over my life, always against my will. But I saw one episode where, like, SpongeBob keeps missing a bus. And it gave me so much anxiety. And I was, like, in the fourth grade. Like, I was like, I hate this show. I didn't even know what anxiety was. Anyway.
Oh, my God. That was, like, was it your, like, first experience with anxiety? That just, like, your introduction to it?
I guess. I don't know. My God. Probably. Wow, anyway, back to the podcast, since people don't like when we deviate.
But no, so like, I mean, that was the thing when I was watching all of this cutting room floor stuff, like with the Fear Factor date and like the hide and seek and all of this stuff is like,
the pancakes. Why didn't
we? Yeah, the pancake eating, like the bugs and is that we had all this to work with, yet we had like 4 weeks of Victoria nonsense. Like, I want to talk to the editor right now.
Yeah, this was genuinely fun to watch. And it was so annoying. Well, one, we called it out. We were like, where are these missing, you know, group dates? And then two, it's like, you could see, I mean, obviously, even this was edited for time, because if it had been in the show, it would have been longer than like the segment they showed us. But like, we would probably have been able to see certain relationships that we were like, how did it get this serious? Yeah. Like, we would have been able to see those blossom more in those areas as well.
Yeah.
So it was just like very frustrating. Also, one thing I want to point out is that where was Matt James in the Fear Factor, as you call it, like the bug episode? Like, he just wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, it was like, well, that was the thing that was funny. Like, when you were saying like, oh yeah, we could have like really seen these relationships pan out. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, I guess. But like, I also, on these group dates that we didn't see, the thing I liked is that I feel like we were just getting to know the women for the first time.
That's
ever.
What I meant.
Yeah. Cause like, you know, it's like, we actually just like got to like see the women and get to know the women and see a little bit of their personalities. We got to see that Katie doesn't like eggs, like, or like she had a struggle with that. And like, that was fun. That was fun. Yeah, I was
Katie
having a good
yacking,
time.
Yeah, Kit lost in the woods while everyone meets in the hot tub. You know what's funny about this is that I literally this season was like, oh, there's been a really low number of hot tub situations this season. No, they were there. They were just
they were there. They were there the entire time.
But yeah, that's more what I meant. Not like the relationships playing out, but us like actually falling in love with these women as well. Like, that's a huge part. That's like part of the magic that makes a franchise work, is that we fall in love with the lead and we fall in love with the women that he falls in love with, or she falls in love with. So,
and then we fall in love with them to be the next lead, and then, you know, it's a lather, rinse,
repeat. But even
them
as a couple, like, we, you know, we quote unquote ship them, or we want them to make it. Like, we want them to beat the odds and beat the weird pre-COVID quarantine, social, like, media quarantine time. And you know, and like, we just didn't have that this season at all. Instead, we just had episodes of bullying bullshit.
I know. It's just like, what focus group did they meet with that was like, please just like rot our brains with toxic nonsense. Dude. Please do that. So I want to see all those dates. Just like I wanted to see all of these makeout moments that Katie apparently had right. with Matt that we're now seeing for the first time when she takes right. the stage, I swear that I thought they kissed like one time peckishly.
On their one-on-one. Yeah.
yeah.
But I thought the same. I thought that yeah. she was like late to the kissing party.
Yeah, it's
well.
Like I thought she was, yeah, like weeks into the kissing party. And, you know, for the most part, they were just like holding hands. That was their dynamic the entire time. But nope, yeah. apparently there was lots of lip smacking that was happening the entire season.
Yeah, there were so many moments in that montage that they showed her that were just not in the show at all. Like yeah, at all. Yeah. And it was really fun and cute to see, and I wish we had seen it so that it yeah. made more sense. Like they were also, I mean, I think this is part of like the, you know, we're getting into like the segments of like Bachelorette edits yeah. With all the women who have like their individual time on the stage, but it's like part of the Bachelorette edit, right? Of like, oh, like just a devastating goodbye. And I was like, it didn't seem that devastating. Like to Katie, yeah, but I think we chalked it up to like her being in this like love cloud of being enamored by the Bachelor, which we know is very common, easy for like the women to get like sucked into that yeah. and he was just kind of not really reciprocating. And then we see this montage of all these things we haven't seen, and it's like, no, they had a connection, they had romantic moments and cute moments yeah. and yeah. all these things that I would have loved to see and would have made that like devastating goodbye like feel more dramatic, honestly. Like it would yeah. have elevated yeah. stakes, it would have made us more invested. Like what they wanted out of the Victoria drama shit, like the drama that we want, like we would have gotten if we had seen more of these relationships being built up and then unfortunately, sadly ending. Yeah. It's very Hunger Games-y in that sense, now that I say it out loud. But yeah, it was wild because Katie's crying, you know, she's actually crying. And it makes sense. Like she hasn't seen any of that before. Like I know all the women were saying, you know, like, that's hard to watch. And I'm sure it was, but this was one of the few times where like all the other women had clips that we did see, and this was kind of like almost validating for Katie in the sense that like no one, even during the season, even in real time yeah. all the women were like yeah. what relationship do you even have
yeah.
it's like
yeah.
there it is
yeah.
okay
yeah, there it is.
It existed
yeah, exactly. So that very clearly seemed, I was a little nervous when they initially brought Katie to the stage. I was like, oh no, okay. Like they were going to get like round two of like people just coming after her. But, you know, it clearly was like a nice Bachelorette poising kind of move,
yeah.
Which wasn't yeah. the only one, because then we get Abigail.
There were so many. There was like five in a row.
Yeah. And Abigail, they teed her up too. So they're really just kind of like, scramble us a bit and, yeah. and hedge their bets maybe. But yeah. I really loved, yeah, like Abigail, you know, coming to the stage and, you know, talks about the impact on the deaf community. I really love that she noted that, because that's something that I think I've heard before, but I'm not really sure if it has really landed, and as, yeah. as far as like me actually knowing the specific difference.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, I was just like really grateful that they aired like that specifically.
Yeah, I didn't know the literal differentiator of capital D death and lowercase d death, which was great to know that there's a way to differentiate these communities, because I did know about the fact that those communities were kind of separate. And like when she talks about being in the gray space of that community, like I do know that it can be really hard to be in the middle of that community, like one foot in the world, one foot out. And that yeah. that yeah. feeling exists in all kinds right. of communities. You know, yeah. it exists as being someone who is Hispanic, raised in the United States, and who still has family back,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
back yeah. in the motherland, you know, to be incredibly specific to myself. Like it exists. That feeling of like being one foot in two worlds exists in a lot of communities. And so it was great to be able to have like a word and term for it for her specific community. There's yeah. this great, I mean, obviously, Brett, you know that I love reality TV. I know you love reality TV. Mm-hmm. When we're not watching The Bachelor, we're watching other smaller, maybe lesser known things. Mm-hmm. And something that is on Netflix that I binged in like literally 2 seconds, I loved it, was Deaf U, and it's about a group of students who attend Gallatin, and it's a school for deaf people and deaf students in DC, and it's like the best deaf school. It's like very prestigious, very acclaimed, And it was really interesting to see the people showcased in the show, because you had students who were from, you know, the capital D deaf community, where they, their parents are deaf. They like grow up deaf. They like, they go to the best deaf schools. They speak the most fluent, the fastest sign language. And then you have students who maybe became deaf, you know, when they were young, or maybe their parents are hearing and they learn sign language slower. They went to, you know, schools with hearing people and like maybe their sign language is slower, or maybe they have more friends or more ties with the hearing community. And some groups of students really had disdain for the hearing world. And like some students really felt like they were like caught between, like they had to choose between the world they grew up with and like being accepted by the capital D deaf community. So I felt like I learned a lot from that show.
Yeah.
But somehow I didn't learn about this capital D lowercase d differentiator. And now I learned it here. So I'm,
yeah.
I don't know. It was really great to see that.
Yeah. And again, you know, so like at the, you know, the tail end of her sit down, you know, Abigail makes a note that, you know, disability isn't always romanticized. So whether it was deaf you, whether it was having Abigail on this season, it's great to see, you know, and it's great to, you know, it's great to have that, just so that we are made more aware of these things, right? Because it's, you know, if you're not exposed to it, there's no way you can learn from that perspective.
Yeah.
So then
I just do hope that she doesn't get flack from parts of the deaf community for saying that, because parts of the deaf community are really adamant that, and I learned this from Deaf You. I don't claim to speak for this community. That they're, you know, deaf culture is real and they have their own culture and way of being. And being deaf isn't a disability, it's a way of life. So I hope that she doesn't get flack for that. But I think it's one of the most concise ways to say what, like, I think her point is extremely valid. So I don't fault her for saying that at all. I just hope that, you know, being in the gray area, I hope that this doesn't cause parts of the deaf community to, you know, not claim her, as we see sometimes in internet world.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So then, yeah, after we get Abigail and we get kind of like another Bachelorette edit there too, we get Serena P and we get Piper. And I will say, like, I mean, I love both of them. What was that?
I said both boring.
Oh yeah, both boring. Yeah, I was gonna put it more gently than that. I was gonna say we didn't really learn anything new from either of them. Instead of just like, what, you were emotional? Oh my god, I wasn't expecting that. That's pretty much what the sit downs were like.
I mean, I really like both of those women. I think they're great. Yeah, I just like really no comment other than they have.
Yeah, it's like they sat down. They did do that.
They looked really pretty.
They did. They did. They really did. And then Matt James came out with his big old beard. We finally saw that beard live in the flesh there.
In the wild.
And you know what I will say? It's like, so I was like a little mixed on the beard. Looked very good during this tell-all.
It looked very good in the tell-all. I feel like he must have trimmed it or something. Because he had some pictures where it was, or maybe he like put some gel in it, you know, to like shape it.
I think he maybe put gel in it to shape it, but I think he not only trimmed it, I think
he
like
definitely had it shaped,
it had some sparkle to it.
I think he definitely did. I saw that too.
It was shimmering in the light.
Oh my god, thank you. I saw that too.
Yeah, so like he was talk about like developing relationships in this season. He was just really trying to showcase his relationship with his newfound beard by making sure it was all shiny for the tell-all. And listen, it worked. It was a good looking beard.
Yeah, it was a good looking beard, I will say. And I'm not normally a facial hair gal. It looked good on him.
Yeah. I thought you liked mustaches.
I literally hate them. Fuck you, Brett. You know that.
All right. Okay.
Gaslighting it. It's fine. Brett can do it too. Cancel Brett.
That's it. All right. That's fair enough.
So then after, you know, we get a nice shot of the beard. And before he starts kind of speaking with the women more one-on-one, he does address them all at once.
I'm a little surprised. You know, I would expect a certain amount of that to be taking place just because there's multiple people trying to date one person. So I just tried to be empathetic to the women and what they were going through because I hadn't gone through it. So I couldn't say, you know what, I wouldn't have acted differently in their position. There's a million different factors that you have to take into account. So I try not to hold them to an unrealistic standard, and I just try to be as realistic as possible.
And I just want to kind of point this out and like a kind of applaud him for it. I think we have been saying time and time again on this podcast, like, you know, we weren't there. Production is behind a lot of things. We understand that they're under a lot of pressure, and so they might act in ways that they're even unfamiliar with within themselves. And we can still hold them accountable while also being able to forgive them and give them the space and time to grow and be better.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, so I did like that he said that, because it is kind of like, hello, viewers, like, don't harass people for not being 100% strong all the time. Or don't harass people for occasionally having misdirected anger, especially if it was occasionally. Because as much as I eye roll at Kit or Chelsea for some of their like moments that I didn't quite agree with, like, we can't even pretend to know what it's like to be in the pressure and absolutely. In their shoes. So it's like, apologize, own it, move on.
Yeah.
Everything's gravy, baby.
The people, it's like the people who I kind of like hold grudges onto is like the people who just like refuse to ever own it, and they like die on the hill. Then I'm like, all right, I don't know, weird move, but okay.
Yeah. Like, or even making it about them also, like, I'm not gonna lie, Serena C is one of the people who irked me really from the beginning. And Serena kind of put some of this into words.
I know you saw a lot of us put our best foot forward around you, and then you also saw not the best parts of ourselves. I hope that watching us doesn't make you see us in a bad light.
Yeah.
As like bad people.
Yeah.
Or being
mean. And I mean, she was obviously talking about herself, because she had so many mean girl moments. Like, she was very closely behind MJ and Victoria. Like, I just wish she had like at least apologized in that moment. And then I could be like, yeah, you're good, girl. Like, we get it. But again, just kind of being like making an excuse.
Yeah.
Rather than just own like it. Owning
it's like,
it.
Yeah. It's like own it without qualifiers. Just own
without
it.
Without qualifiers. That's so key. And so, you know, Matt goes on to be like, of course, you know, like, I know you all, whatever. But
what a lot of us are understanding is that there comes a point in time we have to be accountable for things. And as tough as that is, like, better now, I feel like, than down the road.
And it's like, yes, thank you. Accountability, accountability. I am annoyed that he kind of was like, Victoria, I know your heart. That was the one thing that I could have done with him doing. Yeah, but again, it's Victoria still needs her redemption arc. So
yeah, you know what I think they were? I think they were just like, so they being, you know, the producer of this tell-all, were very much just trying to shift the general tone of the entire tell-all to the point that maybe slightly overcorrected and like kind of swept Victoria in the forgiveness blanket, you know?
Yeah. And then I will say I'm also just like really hyped that they called out, not only called out, but created a montage of Matt kissing open with his eyes open. And not only that, but then we also got footage of them talking about it, like literally Matt making jokes about it, like literally the women talking about it. It was just so funny. I think it's crazy that, you know, Piper said something to him about it. Like, I don't know, that whole part, like, wow, was it ridiculous. And I just can't handle the fact that he never knew that was a thing.
I mean, it's one thing. That's the thing. It's like, it's one thing to like catch yourself opening your eyes every once in a while. We had that whole conversation.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sometimes you just want to check in, whatever. But it's a whole other thing to like miss that that's like a thing that we all know that we shouldn't do.
I mean, the girls found out for a reason, because they do the normal thing of like opening your eyes every once in a while.
Yeah,
that's normal.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But listen, like, I don't know. I'm kind of hot take. It's like, I know he said he was going to like not, you know, kiss with his eyes open anymore. But I'm like, just like, you don't have to completely shut him, you know, just like do it less. Right.
Yeah. It's okay to peek every once in a while. Middle ground. Moderation is the key for everything in life.
And then with that, we get to the little classic blooper reel of the tell-all, you know, just to express it. There's lots of bugs.
There's always so many bugs. I will say there's always so many bugs in the blooper reel. It's it's like a go-to.
Yeah, it's a good go-to.
Yeah.
And then we get a little – I actually really liked the hot wings moment with, like, JoJo and Tayshia.
Also, did they cut them completely from the season? Like, I don't remember seeing them in the season. Or am I going crazy?
I'm – honestly not even sure. Because, like, now I can't remember, like, now I can't remember. I don't think they did either. I think you're right. I don't think they did either. But I can't remember for sure. Because I remember seeing, like, it's like, oh, like, this was left out. This, they just left so much out. They left so much out. Why? Just why did they do this to us?
And, like, this was, like, a date activity. Like, Hot Wings with JoJo and Tayshia. Like, were they doing this while the girls were playing with bugs? Like, where, what was the point of them eating Hot Wings? It was funny. It was entertaining. Yeah, I wish they left it in. I wish I knew more of the context. Anyway.
Yeah.
We have a lot more hot tubs.
And we have the hot tub moment with Matt and Serena P, which I actually wanted to call that one out in particular because we've had like plenty of accidental boner moments pop up on this show, but I don't think it's ever been like quite as on the nose. Matt here was just like, I have a boner. I need a robe. Like that was just really owning it. Yeah. So kudos. And then we get a teaser for next week, you know, so
but not before an awkward Chris Harrison monologue that they chose to not edit out.
And of course, Bachelor Nation, man, we miss you. Man, I miss having a studio audience. Oh, it's so good when you got that energy. Soon, hopefully soon, we'll all be together again. But please join
like
us
that feels Monday, like March 15th. Just like,
It could, it's just so crazy because like, well, one, we know things are always edited out for time. Like we know these shows are long and sometimes they release some of the things that are edited out for as like bonus content, right? Like, especially if it's like a whole chunk. We know that there was a moment in the Women Tell All where they talked about the Rachel Kirkconnell stuff.
Yeah.
We know because Chris brought it up to Rachel Lindsay.
Yeah.
That's obviously not in there, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, we know they could have edited that out. And so, again, a choice.
They also, that reminds me, they also edited out Heather entirely because we saw her long-ass hair. We know that that's Heather and yet did not choose to include her.
Wait, yes. Okay, well, this goes back to what I said. Sorry, maybe we're a little bit all over the place in this episode, but that goes back to what I was saying earlier about like erasing the bullying that existed in the house. Yeah, like, even after Katie was gone, like, those women were vicious to Heather, vicious, and they don't address it at all.
Yeah, at all.
Instead, they go down this weird, like, bully apology. Like, I don't know. Like, that did rub me the wrong way. I meant to bring that up earlier. Sorry, I didn't. It's here now.
Yeah.
That was that. It seems, to your point, very intentionally trying to course correct the tone of the night and to make it as less catty as possible and to kind of elevate all the women to like a more
neutral state
or a less toxic state, a more neutral state. Yeah. Which is like, now's not the time. Now's the time to address things and then get on with it. You know, then neutralize after you address things.
Right.
But whatever. And so then after that, we have the teaser. We see Fantasy Suites. They bring Matt's dad in, which I was like, oh, okay, I didn't realize that they actually had a relationship or they spoke, or maybe they
I don't know if they do. Yeah. I don't think they do. And that's like why I'm like, man, that, I mean, I guess we're going to see what the fuck is up with that. But like, holy shit at that whole thing.
Yeah, that felt like, oh no, a recipe for disaster. Honestly, I was like, oh no.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we have Matt walking through a fucking snowstorm without a jacket.
Yeah.
Why? What's the purpose?
Was this match choice or production's choice? Like, this gave me extreme, like,
what was the reason?
We all had like that one person we went to high school with. Well, you didn't. You were warm weather. Yeah,
leave me out of this. Leave me out of this.
Okay, so anyone who had seasons knew like
we
that
had
one
spring
person
and summer. Okay,
who had winter? I should say. We all had that one person we went to middle school, high school with who would wear shorts in the middle of winter and be like, this is fun. I'm like, cool. Like, look at me. I'm so tough. I wear shorts in winter. No, you're dumb. Like, you're going to catch a cold. Stop it. Stop it right now. Jack and Matt.
Oh.
Yeah. No.
What did you want to say?
Jack is the person from high school.
Wow, you are name dropping.
I'm naming names. Naming names. So, like, Jack from high school and Matt James, put some more appropriate attire on, please. Thank you.
And with that, I think that's another episode of Baby Got Batch.
This episode was produced by us, Brett Vergara and Camila Salazar.
Have any questions, comments, opinions, haikus, or love letters for us? Email them all to babygotbatchpod@gmail.com.
And then listen, don't forget to rate and review and, you know, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And listen, 5 stars would be awesome.
And if you're not yet, follow us on social media. We're at Baby Got Batch Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
And since you're, you know, there already, if you want to follow us personally, we're at Brett S. Vergara and at Kami La 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 with 2 A's at the end on both.
Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.